Community Radio.
It's about real people.
Not sound bites.
Not more talking heads.
Not on this show.
Interchange is a community access media forum fostering unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Conversations that challenge the ways we perceive the world around us.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Hello, and welcome to Interchange. I'm your host this evening, Allison Bechtesh. I have here in the WFHB studio with me, Bob Fox and Fred Jones, business agents for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers No. 1393. Tonight, we'll be speaking about recent contract negotiations between the local electrical workers union and local utility company Vectren Electric, and how that ties in with the so-called right to work bill currently on the floor in the General Assembly that is making headlines nationwide. Thank you both for coming onto the show. I know you left demonstrations at the State House today to come and be here, and I really appreciate that.
Thanks for having us, Allison.
It's good to be here.
Before we get into the discussion, I want to provide our listeners with the update to the House Bill 1001, the right to work bill in the Indiana House. It was passed in the House Employment, Pensions, and Labor Committee today. That means the next step is for the entire House to vote on it. We will get more into the right to work legislation later on the show. It's really important for me to dig into how the right to work legislation affects local unions here. And so we have a perfect example with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers 1393. Just last month was the expiration of the 3-year contract with Vectren and its union workers. Vectren presented a contract on November 30th and gave a deadline of December 16th, when the union voted against adopting the contract. We, WFHB, saw the locked out Vectren workers once that contract fell through, and I spoke with them on December 19th. I'm just going to air a segment now that details what the workers were going through on that day.
Anyone passing through the 300 block of 4th Street today likely saw members of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local Union 1393, standing in their Carhartts and jeans, each with a poster strung around their neck reading, "Locked Out" by Vectren. These men are all part of the workers' union that local utility provider Vectren Energy barred from entering their place of employment beginning Friday, December 16th. On 4th and Madison, standing behind a table with informational flyers, was a service specialist named Dallas Swafford. Swafford is also part of the IBEW and USW Negotiations Committee, responsible for representing the union during contract talks with the Vectren Corporation. I asked Swafford why he and his fellow union members were standing outside Vectren's offices this morning.
We were locked out by Vectren Corporation on Friday morning. We reported to work, and they told us they didn't have any work for us.
So everyone standing out here works for Vectren?
Yes. We're all Vectren employees here in the Bloomington area. We take care of Bloomington, Martinsville, Bedford, Mitchell, Shoals, Crane. We had a rejection vote on the contract.
We
told them we were willing to work, keep on working without a contract, but they chose to lock us out. And that's why we're all out here. All union employees that work for Vectren were locked out.
So you're not getting paid to work today?
No.
Are other people at work?
Managers and contractors. They brought them in to, they said for the state, they brought 300 contractors and 200 managers in to do the work of 270 people usually do. So that's what we're faced up with right now.
So what's going on here? What's this about?
We are just standing here in unity, letting everybody know that we're locked out. We were willing to work. They didn't want our services.
The union rejected the contract that Vectren offered because of significant changes to on-call procedures of off-duty employees.
Well, part of what brought the rejection vote on was a reduction in staffing. They haven't hired anybody in this office for 2.5 years. And our union through the years has went down from 500 and some employees down to 270. So yeah, that with the reduction in staff and not having, you know, just people, bodies available, has put a damper on everything. It's made it hard to keep going. And the big thing with this contract is they want us to respond to more emergency call-outs. And, you know, guys have a life other than the gas company. You know, we give them 100% call-out emergency response 1 week a month by being on service watch. And they're wanting like 50% the other 3 weeks. And we feel that's just unreasonable because we got families, we got lives, and we got things we want to do too. You know, we're utility workers. We're here to keep the public safe, protect life and property. That's the union's motto, you know, and that's what we're here to do. But we can't do it, you know, 24/7, 365 days a year.
The employees are not allowed on veteran property, and the offices are on lockdown with security guards standing at the doors to ensure no union employees enter the building. The union has been in contact with a federal mediator, but Veteran has informed the mediator that they are not able to meet to renegotiate the contract until December 29th at 1 p.m.
So when they find time in their schedule to sit down and meet with you, what kind of response do you expect?
We're not sure. They do have the federal mediator involved now, so hopefully it'll be positive.
Are they allowed to keep you out indefinitely?
Yes, they can keep us out indefinitely. At this point, it being a lockout, they cannot replace us permanently. So we're here to see what it takes.
Mark Gardner was also standing in front of Veteran this morning, and while he says his nearing retirement makes the contract negotiations less important to him, he is concerned for the younger workers, some of who are living paycheck to paycheck and will be hit hard with the unexpected loss of income as the year draws to an end. Gardner has seen disagreements before the union and Veteran Corporation before and suspected there might be a lockout.
Well, the contract talks weren't going so well, so we thought it might happen. It's happened before lots of times. I've been here going on 27 years and it's happened a lot of times. So.
Does it ever resolve with the union winning, or is it always a bit Veteran gets its way?
Veteran usually gets its way, unfortunately.
The Veteran Corporation will not employ workers who do not have a current contract. When the union refused to sign the new contract that stipulated longer on-call hours, Veteran responded by refusing work to union employees, even temporarily as negotiations continue. Gardner explains Veteran's contract policy.
They won't let us work without a contract. They just won't. They just, in the past, they've said they can't trust us to let us work without a contract because we might walk off the job right in the middle of a job or something, which we wouldn't. There's no way we would do that, especially with the kind of job we have. We would never do something like that. You know, the public safety is involved. But that's their excuse. That's why they say they can't let us work without a contract.
Gardner cited similar examples in the Midwest of corporations working to weaken unions, but said that workers' unions have contributed significantly to improving the lives of the middle class.
Well, yeah, they're under attack big time all across the country. Wisconsin, Ohio, Michigan, you know, all across the country. They want rid of the unions, you know. They don't want to have to deal with them anymore. I'll share with you what my dad always told me. He passed away a year ago this Thanksgiving. He said if it weren't for the unions, we'd all still have outside toilets. And I think he's right.
Can you elaborate? How do those two things connect?
Well, I mean, I think the unions finally got us to where we could have a living wage, and the middle class could actually have a home and a car and, you know, enough money to put food on the table and things like that. Otherwise, we'd still have outside toilets and no indoor plumbing, probably, just like my dad said.
The workers will continue their demonstration through Thursday this week, reducing the crowd to shift work so they can reach the other communities affected by the lockout, including demonstrations outside the Bedford and Martinsville offices. The lockout affects Veteran workers in the majority of Indiana, including northern Indiana and Huntington, southern Indiana and Clarksville and New Albany, and central cities such as Lafayette and Noblesville. A day of solidarity is scheduled for next Wednesday, December 21st, but Swofford said there were other ways the public could support the union as well.
Honk. Give us your support. Just stand behind us. You know, it's just... I vote for the to get that law out of here, you know, the what is it? right-to-work law. I've got some postcards here. Back your unions. It's the backbone of the America.
All right, so that was taped in December. And can you start out, Bob, by telling me, or confirming, I guess, that the main point of contention with that contract was the huge increase in the amount of time workers were on call 24/7?
Yeah, that was, I would say, the driving factor that forced our membership to vote down the contract. What they were experiencing was they thought it was an invasion upon their personal lives by making themselves available to veterans 24/7 without compensation, I might add. So what we did during those contract negotiations, we tried to bring to light to veteran what kind of impact that was going to have on our membership, especially with single family members or single moms, dads that may have to help with daycare. Being available 24/7 for a call-in was just an unreasonable approach. And, you know, we had been negotiating with Vectren since probably about September to try to address these issues with them. And I think it was safe to say that what we experienced out of Vectren was arrogance. They felt like that they had the upper hand, and they were not willing to move off their position. As a matter of fact, when they came to the table, they originally wanted our members to be available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to respond to calls at least 75% of the time. So that means when they called our members after hours to respond to an incident, they would have to come out three of the four times, or they would be faced with discipline, which ultimately would lead to discharge, and that doesn't provide any protection for their family.
I think it's interesting you mentioned how Vectren presented things. I actually have a clip from a Vectren representative, and it was interesting to hear how they presented the benefits of the new contract and rephrased the on-call requirement. So I'm just going to play that here for a moment.
In your press release, you detail some of the benefits of the package that you presented. Can you tell me about those?
Sure. It was guaranteed annual wage increases each of the 3 years. They also got increased pension contributions. They have health care coverage that exceeds national averages. And then we also asked for some provisions to enhance emergency response. So on the benefits and wages side, it was a very fair, highly competitive offer, especially given this economy. And even without this economy, it's still a very fair offer. And again, we sought to enhance some safety and emergency response provisions.
So obviously there's some semantic differences there in how they present that. And it was a big controversy. You didn't come to a conclusion right away, and they were locked out. Can you tell me what happened next?
Well, first off, I just want to mention that soundbite. That was a, I would call that a ballet dance for her to make those comments that, certain areas, especially on the wages and the benefits, how they've gone above national average. This was never about wages. This was never about benefits. This was just about individuals and their personal lives and the company trying to own them 24/7. But what happened after our contract really expired December the 1st, and during negotiations, it was pretty clear we weren't going to get an agreement right away. It drug on for quite a while, and then we got down to a few days before the expiration of the contract on December 1st. The company presented to us what they call their last best final offer, which basically means we haven't agreed to anything. That's as far as they're willing to go, and we have a policy out of our local that we're going to take it out to the membership and let them vote on it. And we are spread out all over the state of Indiana. I think we're in 49 counties at Vectren. It's the old Indiana Gas area, and it takes a while to put that kind of complex package out and explain it to our membership So the company agreed to extend the contract while we went out and explained the entire package until December the 16th at 7:30. And we went out, met with our membership, explained the package to them, and then on December the 15th, we did a mail-in ballot, and we picked the ballots up and counted them that day, and 69% of our membership voted the contract down. This is a joint contract with IBEW, Local 1393, and United Steelworkers, Local 7441, and Local 12213, which is out of the Terre Haute area and also out of the Muncie, Anderson, Greenfield area. And we actually put all the votes together, so that's a total count from all the membership. So once we had the turndown vote, we contacted the company and asked them if they were interested in going back to the table and discuss the issue further. And their response to me was, we'll get back to you on that. And that was on Thursday, and then Friday morning, about 8 o'clock in the morning, I received a phone call from the HR director for Vectren to advise me that effective immediately, our membership will be locked out. And I conveyed to her, I said, well, we're willing to extend the agreement. Our guys are willing to work until we get this worked out. We would also be willing to agree that we would give you, you know, an adequate time or notice if there, you know, if we would decide we're going to go on strike, so that it takes away the fear that our membership will walk off the job. And her response was, no, we're not interested in that. We're going to lock you out. And I said, okay, well, you know, anytime you want to come back to the table and continue discussion, you've got my number. Give me a call. After that conversation, it was probably within 24 hours, I received a call from the federal mediator, Conrad Bowling, and he had indicated that he had heard about the situation and wanted to see if there's any interest in the parties getting back together and continued dialogue. I told him that we'll be willing to do that. And just let us know. We'll be glad to come back to the table and continue to negotiate. And Conrad called me back. It was probably later that day. Actually, it was in the evening. And told me that Vectren would be willing to go back to the table and continue to talk, but they weren't available until the 29th of December. Now, keep in mind, this is December the 16th. And Christmas is a week away. And our membership is on the street. It's going to affect their families. You know, this is not something that we did. We didn't walk out. They put us out. So I had told Conrad, I said, well, that's disappointing, you know, that they're not willing to come back in any sooner than that. To us, that clearly shows that Vectren is the Scrooge of corporate America by, you know, putting their employees out a week before Christmas without even coming to the table to try to work the issue out. So it was approximately 2 days later, and I received a call back from Conrad, and he had indicated that the company found some time and they could meet with us on the 21st of December. And that's when we met with the federal mediator, and we met with Vectren and commenced negotiations again.
All right. Well, we're going to go to a break, and we'll come back and talk about the outcome of those negotiations. I'm Alice Bechtish for Interchange, and I'm speaking with Bob Fox and Fred Jones, who are business agents for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 1393. And we'll be coming up on more discussions on right to work and how that affects the local unions here.
Support for WFHB comes from Taste of India, a locally owned and operated restaurant featuring a lunch buffet open 7 days a week with a variety of vegan and vegetarian options. Taste of India is located at 316 East 4th Street, next to the fire station. Dine in or call ahead for takeout or home delivery. 333-1399.
Listening to Interchange on WFHB. I'm your host, Allison Bektesh. Here with me this evening is Bob Fox and Fred Jones. They're representing the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 1393. And we're talking about, as 2011 came to a close, the union here in town and Vectren Electric had a contract dispute that highlights one of the roles of the union in a workplace. In order to understand the changes to the current, what the right to work bill would change to unions, I think it's important to understand the roles of a union as they stand now. So if you could finish off with what the union then was able to do when they came back with the federal mediator and how those negotiations ended up.
Sure. We had negotiations on December 21st. We started about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. During those discussions, we let the company know that the membership was conveying to us several areas that we felt they needed to address. One of the biggest topics was the overtime response rate, where it was mandatory that you had to respond to 50% of after-hour calls. Now, you need to understand that, Vectren, just like any utility, they have a emergency watch, where someone is on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to respond to abnormal conditions. And, that would be things as simple as a customer has no gas in their house and someone needs to go out and investigate and find out why, to more complex issues where there's a underground leak, there could be an explosion, it could be a fire. The response on that is 100%. I mean, someone's available to respond to that at all times. The 50% is the secondary response, where the individuals on watch are unable to take care of the issue, and you need backhoes, dump trucks, compressors to come out and dig up the street and make the repairs or whatever the situation would be. That's the piece where they wanted the 50%. And we believe the driving force behind all of this was Vectren had made a decision back in April 2011 to close 16 of its 29 operating centers around the state. And what those are, that is the field offices where the membership reports to on a daily basis. That's where equipment is stored. That's where emergency supply is kept. And anything to deal with those communities is in those buildings. Some of the offices that they closed, the 16 in this area, they closed the Bedford location, they closed the Martinsville location, and they closed the Seymour location. And, the Bedford location's been open since 1945, just like the Martinsville location and the Seymour location. Both of those were open in 1945. Out of Bedford, there's 9,500 customers, and out of Martinsville, there's almost 14,000 customers. And Seymour has 6,000 customers. And all of those areas were combined into other offices. Seymour went to Columbus office, the Martinsville, and the Bedford locations merged into the Bloomington location, which means that Bloomington now is responsible for a larger geographical area to respond to abnormal conditions. And the membership knew that secondary response rate would put even a greater burden on them, because Vectren has made the decision not to replace employees going on almost 2 years. And through attrition, they have reduced the workforce since 1995 by 45%. And since 2008, they have reduced the workforce by 11%. And
can I ask you what Vectren gave as reasons for that? I mean, what it sounds like you're saying is that they were cutting down jobs and just adding those same roles onto other workers without any increased pay. I would think they would have come with some kind of justification.
Yes, their justification, if you call it that, would have been new technology. New technology allows us to be able to dispatch employees from their homes by having them home-based, and having the physical buildings is not as important as it once was. If you recall, back, 10, 15, 20 years ago, the field locations, you used to be able to go in and pay your gas bill. You could go in and buy appliances. And the company has slowly eroded that away, and now they've eroded away the ability for emergency response. All of the service specialists, effective March of 2011, were home-based. In other words, they start at their house. Their tickets are put on laptops via wireless connection, and they are dispatched out to take care of whatever would come up. But the problem that, for some reason, they're not getting is it was never about the first responder. It's always about the second responder. We can't have members have backhoes and dump trucks parked in their front yard, waiting for that time when they need to respond. So what happened is, if there's an event in Martinsville and they need the dump truck, backhoe, whatever the case may be, they're coming to Bloomington to pick it up. And unless you get them jetpacks, it's still going to take time to get there and to get the equipment back. And these are large pieces of equipment that take a while to move across the road. One thing I want to mention is we're not standing by and just letting Vectren make this decision to close those offices without someone asking the hard questions, how's that in the best interest of the public. We had 17 individuals with the unions file a complaint with the Indiana Regulatory Commission in May of this year. Some of those individuals are fire chiefs. John Wagner, the fire chief out of Bedford, he filed a complaint as part of the complainants. Kevin Allen out of South Lawrence Utilities, he filed on the complaint. We even had an individual, customers, that were concerned about the emergency response with these office closings. And all of these individuals, along with the unions, have asked the Indiana Regulatory Commission to hold a public hearing and see if Vectren is living up to its obligation to its customers to protect the safety of the public and also its employees. That hearing is scheduled in February 13th through February 15th of this year. And if you want to know more information about that, we have a website that we have established for the sole purpose of the complaint, and that address is www.ibewusw.com.
Excellent, and I think we'll air that again later in the show so that listeners can go to that if they'd like to. Can you get back to the negotiations and what the union was able to do when they went back and sat at the table with Vectren?
Well, we were successful in convincing the company that the 50% response rate was unreasonable, and about 1 o'clock in the morning on the 22nd, after a 12-hour negotiating session, the company finally moved off of its position on the 50%, and we were able to reach an agreement. The response rate after hours would be 30% in the first year, 35% in the second year, and 40% in the third year. However, Vectren wanted to keep the mandatory 50% response rate for any employees that they would hire after the effective date of this agreement. Well, given the fact they haven't hired anybody in 2 years, we figured that was a pretty safe bet, so we weren't too concerned about that.
And how does this incident relate to the relationship between unions and employers? If you could go into that a little bit. We talk about them as entities, a union or an employer, but there was literally people sitting down at a table negotiating. How does that work?
You mean the actual process?
Right. What's the relationship between unions and employee and companies?
Well, out of our local, we have approximately 30 labor agreements. Our local's been around since the 40s. We represent primarily utilities. Duke Energy is out of our local as well, along with a bunch of the REMCs around the state. And we, I would say for the most part, we have a pretty decent relationship with employers. But for some reason, when we deal with a veteran, we always have a, we just kind of butt heads a little bit on that relationship. So when we were at the table, the company presented to us, you know, more, it was more the arrogance. It's, you know, it's their way. You know, they basically hold all the cards. And, you know, our job as union leaders is to try to get some of those cards for our membership in rights. You know, the unions are the ones that brought you the weekends. You know, that wasn't something that the employers decided, hey, it'd be a great idea for guys to get Saturday and Sunday off. That was the unions that, that fought for that. And even the unions fought for a bunch of the laws that are on the books today that the younger generation has a tendency to think that that was just a given, that it just came along. But that is not true. That those are on the books today because unions fought for that. And, you know, a lot of the politicians felt it was important enough to put it in the books. And now everyone gets to enjoy those benefits of how the unions fought for those.
Speaking of politicians, obviously we're going to get into the right to work bill that is the hot topic in Indiana right now. And that is presented often as helping the workers, that when you go to start a new job, you no longer are required to pay a due. Now, you're already not required to pay dues to unions, as we'll hear later in the show. That's already a federal mandate. But if I wanted to get a job at Vectren, do I go talk to Vectren? Do I have to go introduce myself to the union? How does that relationship work between the union and employees?
Well, if there's a if Vectren makes a decision to hire employees, Vectren does the hiring. Vectren does the interviewing. Vectren goes through whatever internal process they may have. They have certain guidelines they have to go through and pass certain tests, et cetera. But it's not through the union. The union doesn't say, oh, Vectren, you're going to hire five employees. Well, here's five people we'd like for you to consider. That's all on Vectren. They make the decision. They decide who they want to hire. And once they hire those employees, we have a labor agreement that dictates the type of benefits and working conditions that would apply to them, even as a new hire. And one of those items in most labor agreements is an article that's typically called a union security clause. And what a union security clause does is it is an agreement between the parties that any employee that is hired at a particular employer under that contract has to pay their fair share for representation. Now, that does not mean that those individuals have to pay union dues or become union members. What that means is they have to pay the cost associated with the administration of that labor agreement, whether it's processing grievances, negotiating contracts, processing a case to arbitration. They would have to pay their fair share. If they choose not to belong to the union, they would still have to pay their fair share, which is a reduced rate, and it's typically called agency fee payer. So they have a reduced amount, which takes out the other stuff because, you know, as you probably are aware, unions are very involved in the communities. They spend a lot of time in community events trying to support things that are important to communities and our members. And if you're not a union member under the union security clause, then you do not have to pay for that type of representation. You just pay for the representation associated with your contract.
So you're talking about some of the benefits that a union has, like you said, filing grievances and negotiating these contracts. Is it harmful to join a union? Does it affect union workers negatively once they've joined?
Well, my opinion, no, of course. But, you know, I'm slanted a little bit on that. But, you know, I think it's a benefit. Because there's a couple things besides just, you know, all the stereotypes that you hear about unions. One of them is you establish a structure, the structure being policies, procedures, training, safety, You know, the company now has to follow that process. They just can't decide they want to do something. They've got to bargain that, and the membership has a voice. And things people lose track of, when you talk about a union, it's not myself, Bob Fox, or Fred Jones at Local 1393. We are not the union. The members, they are the union. We would not exist without them. And when we bargain a contract or we make changes to a labor agreement, it's the membership that's involved in that. We are just their conduit. We are their voice. And the benefits of belonging to a union, I think more than anything else, it gives you a voice. It gives you a voice so you don't have to worry about, you know, this boss is upset because I said this or that. It protects you. It allows you to speak your mind within reason and air your grievances with your employer without fear of losing your job. And I think that's the point that's really missed, is the voice the membership has.
All right. Well, obviously this wouldn't be so controversial if there wasn't another side of that. Not only do people on the other side say that this is bad for workers who are forced into something that they don't want to be, it's also brought up that this is bad for employers, the corporations. And actually, you'll hear both Democrats and Republicans say that, but for different reasons. The Democrats will come in and say that corporations don't want this because actually it weakens their ability to control their workers. And Republicans will say that employers don't want this, and that we would have more businesses coming to the state if these rules weren't in place, or if we did have right to work legislation in place. Can you tell me how current unions harm corporations?
Well, I think if there's going to be any harm at all, it would be somebody's holding them accountable. And corporations don't like that. You know, they like to be able to make cuts and increase profits at any whim that they desire without the consequences of the impact it is to the employees. I don't believe that the facts, if people take the time to look into this right to work for less bill that's out there, I think they will come to their own conclusion that in itself is not something that is going to increase jobs. I mean, just in the Midwest, for example, in the last 2 years in Indiana, we've increased manufacturing jobs in Indiana more than all the right-to-work states in the Midwest combined. So the argument that the right-to-work will increase jobs in the state is false.
All right. Well, I'm with Bob Fox and Fred Jones from the IBEW 1393. We're going to take a break and head right into that discussion of the current right-to-work bill that was passed in a House committee today, and it's we'll touch on that and have Fred come in with some points about that in just a moment. This is Interchange on WFHB. I'm Allison Bechtesh, speaking today with Bob Fox and Fred Jones. We've been speaking about a recent action taken by a local union here in town to work out contract issues with Vectren Corporation. I want to expand this discussion to incorporate the Right to Work bill that's been making national headlines recently. Rachel Maddow went on a rant about the legislation after the National Football League Players Association made a statement in support of workers here. This is relevant, of course, because in less than a month, we will be hosting the Super Bowl in Indianapolis, and it's tied in very closely. There's reports that Republicans want to rush this through the House before that comes, the Super Bowl comes, so that that's not an issue on game day. Indiana Democrats have repeatedly stated in caucus during the start of the General Assembly, started last week, believing that Republicans would take immediate action to pass this bill through if they were able. So I want to start with a clip from the AFL-CIO Representative Tim Harris. He describes, from his perspective, obviously the labor perspective, what the Right to Work bill is.
Right to Work is a cleverly named but falsely named tool designed to lower worker wages and frankly bust unions by stripping away average workers' ability and rights to collectively bargain. What this law would do would prevent if a person goes and works for a job that has a union in existence, and that person decides they don't want to belong to that union, under current federal law, they're not forced to join a union. However, they are required to pay any fees associated with the cost of negotiating the union negotiating their wages and benefits. What Right to Work would do would be to strip away that requirement that people pay their fair share. We like to call it the Right to Freeload bill. And in essence, by doing this and by allowing people to get services for free, it would ruin it for everyone else, because who wants to pick up the tab for another person, another coworker? And so that's why we're vehemently opposed to this. 22 states already have this bill. They were sold this idea under the auspices of economic growth. Unfortunately for those states, they've seen their unemployment rates skyrocket. They've seen their workers' wages fall on average by $5,500 per year, and workplace safety dramatically decreases. You're 50% more likely to die in a right-to-work state on the job than you are in a non-right-to-work state like Indiana, and that's simply because there's nobody speaking up for workers' rights and for the best interest of workers.
Okay, and then again, the House Bill number 1001 is what was passed today in committee that deals with Right to Work, and I just want to read a little bit of the wordings directly from the bill, that it makes it a Class A misdemeanor to require an individual to become or remain a member of a labor organization, to pay dues, fees, or other charges to a labor organization, or three, pay to a charity or another third party an amount that represents dues or fees or other charges. Fred, can you talk a little bit more about Right to Work, maybe respond to that clip or give us a summary from your point of view?
Well, I thought the clip explained it pretty well. And as you read the bill, they've named the bill Right to Work, and nowhere in there does the word work appear. And it's pretty evident that what they're after is to gut the union's ability to have the money to service their members. Plain and simple, that's pretty much what it is. And I have done some research myself on Bureau of Labor Statistics as well, and I found that in 2010, the Right to Work states were 32.9% below in wages the other 28.
So with statistics like that, this is looking like it's going to go through. The Republicans hold a majority in the Indiana General Assembly. If it weren't for the Democrats staying away from the floor recently, it would have been passed. There's got to be some reason why they are so eager to pass this.
Well, you know, that brings to light the fact that the governor and the rest of them have not answered the question about who is behind it, who is funding it, who is doing this. Can you name the employers that are refusing to come here because it's not a right to work state? They don't come forward with any evidence that the bill would help people, working people in Indiana. I can't explain it. Why, other than they must not know.
Well, it's interesting. Right to work has been a hot topic in a lot of Midwest states, and it was a big deal last year with teachers' unions in Wisconsin. But it actually hasn't been passed in any states since 2001 in Oklahoma. So this would be, Indiana would be leading the way, and we are a very industrial state with lots of labor unions. And like I said, the House is on its way to passing it, but the Democrats are staying away right now. Representative Matt Pierce from this area is among those staying off the House floor, which just avoids enough people being there to allow a vote to be taken. And so we spoke with him actually earlier last week, and we have an audio clip from him, also from the Democrats' perspective of what the right to work is.
I'm just frustrated because I think there's just so much misinformation. I mean, first of all, just the title, right to work. I mean, that's nice. Who could be against the right to work, right? And so then it's like, well, nobody should be forced to join a union. And like, I agree with that. So the first thing you have to know is that federal law says no employee may be forced to join a union. And we also have in the U.S. Constitution, in the First Amendment, the right of free association. So you can't be forced to join groups you don't want to belong to. So that's the first issue. The second thing you have to know is when a union is certified to represent the employees in their workplace, so there's an election held, the employees decide they want to be represented by a union, there may be still some people who don't want to join a union, even though it's representing them. Now, there are U.S. Supreme Court rulings that say under the Fair Labor Act, the unions must represent every worker in that workplace, whether they are a member of the union or not. So what has developed is oftentimes in contracts, it will say that in this workplace, if employees are not in the union and not paying regular union dues, then they need to pay some fair share fees toward the cost of bargaining and representation. Because if they have a grievance, if they feel they've been treated unfairly in the workplace, they have the right to go to that union and say, you need to represent me through the grievance process. And the courts have said they have to do that. So that's what this is all about. What's really going on here is this is not about economic development. This is about attempting to destroy and weaken the voice of the workers who don't often align with the policies and priorities of the people in power today. That's all this is. This is a power grab, nothing short of that. And if you think it's economic development, it's really just surrender. It's raising the white flag, because what it's saying is Indiana will now have an economic development strategy of being a low-wage state.
So obviously that's Representative Pierce's opinion that this is going to look pretty good to companies who are currently maybe even going overseas because they can pay such low wages, and maybe now they'll develop in Indiana and be able to pay similar wages, making Indiana bring new businesses in and look like we have a booming industry. As you've noted, we actually have a rise of industry as compared to the surrounding states. Anyway, I was wondering if you have thought about this, if and when the bill passes, what effect will it have on your union?
Well, I don't think it'll have a large effect on the members that we have right now. But purposely, as Bob mentioned earlier, not only Vectren, but a lot of companies have not been hiring. So what's developed is the average age of the working man at these companies is, up very high. And over the next 4 or 5 years, you're going to have a big turnover if, in fact, they quit using so many contractors and start hiring in-house. At that time, I think they will make it a point to emphasize the fact that you know, as a new employee, you can do this or that. And as much as I hate to say it, you know, young people nowadays are not really educated about unions and what they have done over the last 50 years or 60 years, you know, for the middle class worker. And I don't know for sure. Hopefully we can educate them real quick in their probationary period as to what can happen if they don't pay their fair share and we're unable to represent them in a manner that will get them the best and the things they deserve.
Bob, do you have any read on that? How many people do you think right now, as you said, they're not hiring, but if they were to be hired and then given this choice, you can put in your dues, but you're not forced to. How many people would say, oh, yeah, sure, I'll open my wallet and pitch in for that?
Well, I think it's going to be a significant impact as they start hiring employees. You know, it's just human nature. An individual will say, hey, I can get the same benefits, I can just get the same wages, I can get the same terms and conditions of employment, and I don't have to pay a dime for it. What's wrong with this picture? And, hey, by the way, if I should happen to get discharged by my employer, I can go to the union and I could say, hey, union, I don't think I was fired properly for just cause. You guys got to represent me. And typically, out of our local, when we take a case to arbitration, you know, we're going to spend between $5,000 and $10,000 out of our general fund that is hard working members' money to represent that individual. So it's not going to sit very well when you have this parallel workforce where one's paying for the other's benefit and, you know, it's turned into a welfare society for unions. And that is really the key to all of this. That's why they're trying to push this, because they know that it's going to weaken the unions. We're going to have less money to fight employers over issues that they should be questioned on. Great example is the office closings. You know, spending money for that, you know, through the different individuals that are involved, that would weaken us. We wouldn't be able to be an active participant in that if Right to Work would get passed.
Now, you came down, you made the trip down to Bloomington from the State House. Can you tell me more about what the current atmosphere at the State House is? What's being done to prevent this legislation? It seems that it's all up to the legislators now.
Well, we had a card signing that went directly to the AFL-CIO, and then the AFL-CIO distributed them to the correct representative and so forth. And we've had thousands of people down there every day demonstrating and, you know, actually going in and talking to their representative. I think the problem is that this is a full blitz by the Republican Party, and they have the numbers. So, you know, hopefully, I've written my representative, I've written my senator, and I hope that every member that we have has, and we've talked about that with them at all our meetings and sent out mailings, et cetera. But I guess we'll find out shortly whether they listened or not. You know, the sad truth is that union represented workers in Indiana are less than 10% of the workers. And, you know, that's true now. It wasn't always true. Indiana is ranked 15th as far as population goes out of all the states. And I can remember when we had companies like Westinghouse, GE, Chrysler, GM, Delco Remy, Otis, RCA, Emerson, Carpenter, Firestone, and now with NAFTA, all those jobs are gone. But we still have maintained these people. There's something about Indiana that has kept these people here. And if this right to work does become true, I mean, I also looked up the average wage in Mexico, 57.40 pesos per day, or $4.25. So if that's what Mitch and the boys want, is for Indiana people to work for $4.25 a day, that's what this bill will do.
I'm interested, too, in the party line on this issue, because I would not imagine that everyone who's in a labor union is a Democrat, and I would not imagine that all Republicans are against unions, but this has been so clearly a partisan issue in the House. What do you do when you're standing next to another worker? Like you said, only 10% are in labor unions. When you stand next to another worker who's with you on so many other issues, and they're just not together here, why has it become such a party line and not a realization of who's working for who or in what capacity?
Well, currently, a lot of times they just don't say anything, or they ignore it, or they walk to the other end of the thing. But, if it becomes a reality, and if 40 or 50% of the workforce at that business ends up freeloading on the other, then I can't understand how businesses can think that is good for productivity. I would think everybody'd be dirty eyeing everybody.
We have 1 minute left, Bob.
Well, I just wanted to mention, you asked that question. Let's not forget that Mitch Daniels, as soon as he was in office, one of his first executive orders, by a stroke of a pen, he eliminated the union for the state employees. And I guess by a stroke of the pen, when he comes out of office, he'll be eliminating he'll be signing in the right to work bill.
That's all for Interchange tonight. I've been speaking with Bob Fox and Fred Jones, both business agents for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, number 1393. They both came down to Bloomington from being up at the State House demonstrating. And tonight at 7 o'clock right now, Mitch Daniels will be giving his State of the State address. I definitely encourage people to tune into that. This will definitely be one of the topics there. And we'll follow it again tomorrow on WFHB. For Interchange, I'm Allison Bechtesh. Thank you both so much for coming down tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks also to our assistant producer, Shane Young, for engineering tonight's program. Interchange is produced by Lewis Malone. Our original theme music is by Jamil Effem. Stay tuned for Stardust with Tillman, coming up next on WFHB.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers working in the studios of community radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Interchange fosters unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Comments, suggestions, and program ideas may be sent directly to the Interchange staff.
The email address is news@wfhb.org.
That address once again is news@wfhb.org.